Chapter 11. I have already told you of the sickness and confusion that comes with time traveling. And with this time, I was not seated properly in the saddle, but sideways in an unstable fashion. For an indefinite time, I clung to the machine as I swayed and vibrated, quite unheedingly how I went. When I brought myself to the dials again, I was amazed to find where I had arrived. One dial recorded days, another thousands of days, another millions of days, another thousands of millions. Now, instead of reversing the levers, I had pulled them over so as to go forward with them, and I had come to look at these indicators, I found myself the thousandth hand was sweeping around as fast as the second hand of a watch into futurity. As I drove on, a peculiar change crept over the appearance of things. The palpitating grayness grew darker. Then, though I was still traveling through with prodigious velocity, the blinking succession of day and night, which usually indicated of a slower pace, returned and grew more and more marked. This puzzled me very much at first. The alternation of day and night grew slower and slower, as did the passage of the sun across the sky, till they seemed to stretch through centuries. At last, a steady twilight brooded over the earth, a twilight broken only now and then when a comet glared across the darkling sky. The band of light that had indicated the sun had long since disappeared. The sun ceased to set. It simply rose and fell in the west and grew ever broader and more red. All traces of moon had vanished, and the circling of the stars had grown slower and slower and had given pace to creeping points of light. But at last, some time before it stopped, the sun, red and very large, halted motionlessly over the horizon. A vast dome glowing with dull heat, now and then suffering a momentary extinction, at some time for a little while glowed more brightly again, but it steadily reverted to its sullen red heat. I perceived by this slowing down of its rising and setting that the work of the tidal drag had been done. The earth had come to rest with one face to the sun, even as our own time the moon faces the earth. Very cautiously, for I remember my former headlong fall, I began to reverse my motion. Slower and slower went the circling hands until the thousandth one seemed motionless, and the daily one was almost no longer a mere mist upon the scale. Still slower, till the dim outlines of the desolate beach grew more visible. I stopped very gently and sat upon the time machine, looking around. The sky was no longer blue. Northeast it was an inky black, and out of the blackness shone brightly and steadily the pale white stars. Overhead it was a deep Indian red and starless, and southeastward it grew brighter as the glowing scarlet cut by the horizon were laid a huge hull of the sun, red and motionless. The rocks about me were of a harsh reddish color, and all traces of life I could see at first was this intensely green vegetation. They covered every projecting point on the southeastern face. It was the same rich green color that one sees in the forest, moss, one lichens in caves, plants they grow in the perpetual twilight. The machine was standing on a sloping beach. The sun stretched away to the southwest. The horizon, the sharp, bright horizon, against the wan sky. There were no breakers, no waves, and not a breath of wind was stirring. Only a slight, oily swell rose and fell like a gentle breezing. Showed that the eternal sea was still moving and still living. Along the margin of the water, sometimes broke a thick incrustation of salt, pink under of the lurid sky. There was a sense of oppression in my head. I noticed that I was breathing very fast. The sensation reminded me of my only experience of mountaineering. From that I judged that the air was more rarefied than it is now. Far away up the desolate slope, I heard a harsh scream. There was a thing that looked like a huge white butterfly go slanting and fluttering up into the sky, circling and disappearing over some low hillock beyond. The sound of its voice was so dismal that I shivered and seated myself more firmly upon the machine. I looked round again and saw that quite near, I had taken to the reddish mass of rock that was moving slowly towards me. I saw one thing that was really a monstrous crab-like creature. Can you imagine a crab the size of yonder table, and with it many legs moving slowly and uncertainly? Its big claws swayed as its long antenna, the large crater whips moving and feeling, and the stalking eyes gleaming at you either side of the metallic front. Its back was corrugated and ornamented with ungainly bosses, and green and crustaceans blotted it here and there. I could have seen many palps of the complicated mouth flickering and feeling me as it moved. I started at this sinister apparition crawling towards me. I felt a tickling on my cheek as though a fly had lighted there, and I tried to brush it with my hand, but in a moment it returned and almost immediately came at my other ear. I struck at this and caught something thread-like, and I was drawn swiftly out of its hand. It's a frightful qualm. I turned, and just as I grasped the antenna of another monster crab, stood just behind me, evil eyes more wiggling on its stalks. Its mouth was alive with appetite, and its vast, ungainly claws, smeared with algal slime, where it descended upon me. In a moment, my hand was on the lever, and I placed a monster between myself and these monsters, for I was still in the same beach, and saw them distinctly move as soon as I stopped. Dozens of them seemed to be crawling here and there in the somber light among the foliated sheets of intense green. I cannot convey the sense of abominational desolation that hung up over this world. The red eastern sky, the northern blackness, the salt dead sea, the stony beach crawling with these foul, slow, stirring monsters, the uniform, poisonous-looking green of the lichenous plant, the thin air that hurts one's lungs, all comprised for an appalling effect. I moved on 100 years, and there was the same red sun, a little larger, a little duller, and the same dying sea, the same chill air, and the same crowd of earthy crustaceans creeping along the green weed and red rocks in the western sky, and I saw a curved tail line like a vast new moon, and I traveled and stopped again, and in great strides of 1,000 years or more dawned on me the mystery of the earth's fate, watching the same fascination as the sun grew larger and duller in the western sky, and the life of the old earth ebb away. At last, more than 30 million years hence, the huge red dome of the sun had come to obscure a tenth part of the darkening heavens. As I stopped one more, the crawling of the multitude of crabs had disappeared. The red beach, save for its livid green, liverwort and lichen, seemed lifeless. And now it was flecked with white. A bitter cold assailed me. Rare white flakes ever and again came unendingly down. In the northeastward, the glare of the snow lay under the starlight of the sable sky. I could see an undulating crest of hillocks, pinkish white. There were the fringes of ice along the sea margin. There was drifting masses further out, but the main expanse of the salt ocean, all bloody under the eternal sunset, was still unfrozen. I looked about me to see any traces of animal life remained. Certain indefinable apprehension still kept me in the saddle of the machine, but I saw nothing moving in the earth or sky or sea. The green slime of the rock alone testified that life was not extinct, and a shallow sandbank had appeared in the sea, and the water had receded from the beach, and I fancied I had found some black object flopping about in the bank. But it had been motionless as I looked at it, and judged my eye had been deceived. Black object was merely a rock. The stars in the sky, intensely bright, seemed to me to twinkle very little. Suddenly I noticed a very circular westward outline in the sun, a chain, and a concavity, a bay had appeared at the curve, and this grew larger. For a minute, perhaps, I stared at this blackness. There was a creeping over the bay. I realized that an eclipse had begun. Either the moon or a planet, Mercury, was passing across the sun's disk. Naturally, at first I took it to be the moon. There, this must be inclined to believe that what I really saw was a transit of an inner planet passing very near to the Earth. The darkness grew faint, and a cold wind began to blow, freshening dust against the east, and showering white flakes in the air increased in number. Beyond the edge of the sea came a ripple and a whisper. Beyond these lifeless sounds, the world was silent. It would be hard to convey the stillness of it. All the sounds of man, the bleating of sheep, the cries of birds, the hum of insects, the stirs that make the background of our lives, all was over. The blackness thickened, and the eddying flakes grew more abundant. And dancing before my eyes, the cold of the air more intense. At last, one by one, swiftly, one after another, the white pale flakes of the distant hills seemed to vanish into blackness. The breeze rose to a moaning wind, and I saw a black central shadow of the eclipse sweeping towards me. It was another moment the pale stars shone alone, visible. All else was rayless obscurity. The sky was absolutely black. The horror of this darkness came upon me. The cold that smote me to my marrow, the pain I was feeling and breathing overcame me. I shivered. A deadly nausea seized me. It was like a red-hot bow. The sky appeared the edge of the sun. I got off the machine to recover myself. I felt giddy and incapable of facing the return journey. I stood sick and confused as I saw the moving thing upon the shoal. There was no mistake now. It was a moving thing against the red of the water. It was a round thing, the size of a football, perhaps, or maybe bigger, and tentacles trailed down from it, perhaps black against the weltering blood-red water. It was hopping fitfully about, and I felt I was fainting, but a terrible dread of lying helpless in that remote, awful twilight sustained me while I clambered up the saddle.